This is West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. Today we hear the story of local humanitarian Moses L. Walker. Kalamazoo's Family Health Center, which has a main facility and four satellite locations, recently named its headquarters after Moses Walker. Walker helped found the center 47 years ago to serve city residents of limited means. The 77-year-old Moses Walker is one of the health center's longtime board members, currently chairperson. He was even once interim director. At the time he helped start the health center, Walker already had his hands full as executive director of the nearby historic Douglas Community Association Recreation Center. From the Douglas, he went on to hold a number of high-level executive jobs at Borges Medical Center and was several times a Kalamazoo City Commissioner. Recently, Moses Walker came to WMUK to talk about his contributions to the Kalamazoo community over the years. Welcome to WMUK.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You've always been in the news over the years.
I try to be not so prevalent in the news anymore.
The Patterson Street location of the Family Health Center named their building after you. It's the Moses L. Walker Building, so
yes.
That's really a great honor.
It was.
You've had a lot of leadership positions in the city of Kalamazoo. From 1968 to 78, you headed the Douglas Community Association.
That is correct.
Yeah. And from 1991 to 1998, you were the vice president of Borges Behavioral Medicine. Is that correct?
I went to Borges first as title-wise as the executive director of the Borges Mental Health Center.
I see.
And that was in 1978. And
how long did you do that?
I did that until the early 80s. They did a restructuring at Borges, and they spun off the services I was responsible for, and I became the president of Delano Clinic. And I was there from 84 till 91. Then we went back into Borges, and then I became the vice president of behavioral care, health services.
And then from 1998 to 2005, you were executive director of community relations.
I was executive director for community relations
for Borges Health Alliance and the Borges Foundation. Well, those are just some of the things you've done. Let's kind of start with your upbringing in Kalamazoo, because I see this as not only just talking about you personally, but you bring historical perspective to Kalamazoo, honestly. You grew up in Kalamazoo.
Born and raised.
Yeah. Where do your parents hail from?
My parents hail from Okolona, Mississippi.
Moses Walker is a Kalamazoo native from a family of eight children growing up in the days of segregation. When you were growing up, what did you want to be?
Oh, that's a good question. I probably didn't have, maybe initially when I first started school, for example, I was majoring in physical education. So I think I wanted to be a coach. But childhood probably didn't have a clear vision, whatever there. But after I got my freshman year, I decided,
Your freshman year at college?
At Western Michigan. So I switched and I went from a physical education major to a social science major.
Before we talk about that, I want to go even a little further back. What I want to talk about is, tell us a little bit about how it was growing up in Kalamazoo.
Right.
You spent time at the Douglas Community Center.
Right.
I should say the Douglas.
Right. It was called the Douglas Community. We referred to it as Douglas Community Center. It may have been an association even in those days.
Right.
But to us, it was the Douglas Community Center.
And you were there? You were friends?
I was raised there. Basically, I was raised there.
Friends with Chuck Warfield there?
Absolutely.
Apparently, they had a nursery there, and they had all kinds of things there.
I went to nursery school there. I went to day camp as we were growing up, day camp there. We learned arts and crafts there. We learned sports at Douglas. We learned how to dance at Douglas, how to shoot pool, how to do whatever. Douglas was the hub.
I was reading about the history of the Douglas. The Douglas was
founded in 1919.
There were two boards at one time.
Right.
There was a kind of an advisory black board, and then there was
a
white board. Right.
That is true.
Yeah. By the time, obviously, you became the executive director in 1968, that was no longer the case.
That is correct.
Yeah. But still, tell us about how it was to be an African-American person in the city of Kalamazoo in terms of race at that time.
Well, I think for us, and I think I can speak for my generation, because people said that racism still existed, but we were not aware of it. our parents may have been aware, and they may have faced it, but they did a job. They shielded us and whatever, because we went to school, I mean, from elementary school on. I mean, it was always an integrated situation. It was always a mixed school from K through 9 at Central High. I graduated high school in 1958. Right. The desegregation didn't come in until the early 70s, you know. So basically, we just went to the school, the neighborhood school. There was only one high school at that point in time, whatever, there. And like my graduating class in 1958, I think it was like 568, there were only 23 people of color, which really was more a reflection of the population and the demographics of the community than anything else. You know?
You say that your parents shielded you from racism, but when you were in the schools, how did your white classmates treat you?
I was always treated well. Fine. I mean, because again, is that maybe we talk about it, being a male, being an athlete.
What sports did you play?
I actually played football, wrestling, and track. So
that made you popular.
Well, you know, you're being an athlete and then probably being outgoing and whatever. Basically, for lack of a better, you know, I was on what was the college prep track, and I was well received, you know, by my teachers and by my classmates. You know.
I was reading something, a profile that the communities and schools did on you, and it had you quoted as saying that as a younger student growing up, that you weren't too focused on your studies.
That's true. That is true. And I was also protected by my high school advisor and shielded by her. And her words, and use her words, he's smart, but he's lazy. And there's a lot of truth in that, you know.
But you changed that around. What made you change that
around? Well, actually, my negative experience in the military.
Walker says it wasn't until he volunteered to serve in the U.S. Army in the 1960s that he encountered overt racism for the first time. When he returned to Kalamazoo rather than be defeated, Walker says he used the experience to strive for excellence in all he does. He re-enrolled in Western Michigan University and began to take his classes serious in a way that he had not before. By the time he reached graduate school at Wayne State University, he knew then he wanted to be a leader. You went to the U.S. Army. Were you in the continental United States? Did you go abroad?
I was, for the most part, in the States. I was stationed at Fort Riley, Kansas. I spent 7 months in Germany, but that's on what the military calls temporary duty, TDY, temporary duty. I was there for 7 months.
You encountered some racism.
Sure.
What happened?
Well, what happened was that when I went into the military, it was my goal is that I wanted to go to Officers Candidate School. And so, you know, the recruiters said, well, we can't just send you there, that you have to go in first and then you got to be tested and you got to qualify. So I went in, I'm tested. There's two tests, you know, one what's called a GT test, a general test, or their version of an IQ. And then second was an OCT, which is basically a math test. But at any rate, you needed a combined score of 225 to qualify. I scored 250. And in spite of my score and being a good soldier, you know, my application was never approved. In those days, I went I was shipped out from Fort Knox to Fort Riley, and then you had to start the process all over again and the denial process all over again. So when they did it, they wanted to ship me out to Germany, and I was still a fighter even in those days. So what I did, I wanted to see the Inspector General, and the Inspector General was equivalent of the Civil Rights Commission. Mm-hmm. And went in there. But at any rate, to make a long story short, what I learned was that I went bounced from place to place to place. And when I was finally bounced in, I was talking, went in to see a colonel. And during our discussion, and he told me, well, but you didn't graduate from college. Well, hell, if I had graduated from college, I wouldn't have been standing here talking to him at that point in time. So that just taught me whatever there, that I had put too much of my life in somebody else's hands. And I made a decision at that point in time, if I was ever denied something in the future, they were going to tell me it was because I was black, you know. But it wasn't because I didn't graduate, I didn't go to college, I didn't have good grades, I wasn't this, I wasn't that. It was strictly based on race. And that was my determination. And that's the way I lived my life, you know.
So are you saying that when you protested or appealed, so to speak, they were saying, well, you didn't have a college degree.
All right. But see, which had nothing to do with it, you know.
Because other people didn't have a college
degree.
That's
right. See, which had nothing to do with it. The fact of the matter is, I tested. I didn't score 226 or 224 or 5 or 6. I scored 250.
Mm-hmm.
So I was way above the cutoff, and I was a good soldier.
You're listening to local humanitarian Moses L. Walker on West Southwest on WMUK. On October 27th, Kalamazoo's Family Health Center, which has 5 locations, named its headquarters after Moses Walker, who was instrumental in founding the center 47 years ago. At the time, he was executive director of the city's historic Douglas Community Association. Walker has been a Kalamazoo City Commissioner several times and served on many local boards, mentoring many people along the way. We rejoin the conversation with Moses Walker talking about racism that he encountered in the military. You came back to Kalamazoo, you were determined, and got your degree. Did your grades improve?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, when I came back, I came right back to Western. Well, while I was in the military, I did take some credit hours at Kansas State University.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that while there. So I came back to Western, and I graduated in 2 years.
His high school guidance counselor, her name was Mildred McConkie. She saw potential in him, and he never forgot that over the years. Now, your counselor, were you able to circle back and talk to her?
Oh, absolutely.
And what did she say to you?
Well, I mean, like I said, the lack of better, she was very proud, you know, because I not only finished undergrad, I went straight from undergrad to graduate school.
Yeah, you went on to
Wayne State.
You got a master's degree in
social work. See, I went straight from Western to Wayne State. And so I went from Western 64 to 66, I finished, and then Wayne State 66 to 68.
Okay, a master's degree in social work from Wayne State in 1968.
In 1968.
And a master's degree in business administration from Western in 1990. You decided to get degrees in social work and business administration. What made you decide to do that?
I always wanted to do something for people, you know. I went to a school of social work, and I was very fortunate to having been accepted and to have gone to Wayne, to Wayne State. But whatever, that was just my drive and my thing, you know, to always, for lack of a better word, you know, to do something of benefit, to do something of service.
And as we spoke about earlier, you went through any number of really high-profile jobs in the executive level through Borges and at the Family Health Center. So I think that you've learned a lot about leadership. Who do you model yourself after as a leader?
Oh.
Why are people always talking about you in such a high, and hold you in such high regard?
One of the things, I will back up a little bit and say, that I got to a point where I didn't know what I necessarily wanted to be, but I did know that I wanted to be the leader.
When did you make that determination?
Oh, I mean, again, back in my 20s. Yeah, back when I finished graduate school and everything. I knew that.
You knew you wanted to be a leader.
I knew I wanted to be a leader.
It was all over you.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So who do you model yourself after as a leader? Or was it just kind of innate in you? Or?
Well, from a support standpoint, I don't want to say model, but when I look at Mr. Horn, who preceded me at Douglas support, we have Mr. Gary, who there, we look at even the people we grew up with at Douglas, Mr. Pettiford, Mr. Caldwell, Mrs. Goodwin, whatever there. So I think maybe not necessarily because from a leadership standpoint, but just from a standpoint of
role modeling?
Of role modeling. That's a good word.
That you saw African-American men in positive roles of leadership.
Right.
And so that then said something to you that you too could do such a thing.
And like while I was at school, my second year as a graduate student, I was assigned to, I was the administrative assistant to Coleman Young. At that point in time, Coleman was in the state Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So I had both the political experience, but at the same time, my curriculum at Wayne, that we emphasize community organization and social planning. So we knew what to do in terms of building an organization and helping an organization to achieve its potential. So I think a combination of factors of the faculty at Wayne, Senator Young at the time, you know, Ms. McConkie, my parents. See, one thing I will say about education, my father, he finished third grade because he came from a plantation-type system.
It was a sharecropping family?
Well, yeah. I mean, in other words, they were.
Right.
They came north when they were like 19, 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But he was third grade. My mother started high school, but my point, they both valued education. So they valued education, so they were determined that their children, all the children, minimally, was going to finish high school. So even back in those days, and I'm kind of jumping around on you, even in those days, I knew I was going to college. I knew way back when I was going to go to college. I knew that.
What leadership nuggets can you impart to us?
Well, the one thing we say is that in terms of for leadership, you've got to be willing to take risk. And one of the things I would say, I've always said that if you run no risk, you create no change. And especially during the days when I was coming along, and we're talking about now when, remember, the Voting Rights Act was passed in 64, the Civil Rights in 65, and we talk about those things there, is that we're coming along at that time, and we understood what it meant to move society forward. So as a leader of Douglas, we did that. One of my favorite verses from the Bible is Proverbs 29 and 18, and where there is no vision, the people perish. So, and another one, a favorite of mine is from John Shedd, is that a ship in harbor is safe, but that's not what ships were built for, you know. So the thing is that you have to be willing to step out and take chances. And my perspective was, if I'm in a position as a person of color, as a male, if I'm in a position to do something, if I'm not willing to speak up and speak out, then who's going to do it? And if I'm not willing to help you, then who's going to do it? And that's always been, and that's the way I've lived my life.
And you did that also when you were at Borges. You had that approach.
Right.
How is it, though, that some people are able to do that and they're well received? Have you ever not been well received?
Well, no, you know, probably not always, but for the most part. But I think number one is how you approach it. But I think, again, which I did not say, leadership takes courage. You know? There are many decisions that you're going to, things you're going to be faced with that are going to be difficult. And if you don't have the courage, you're not going to do it. And I think, again, is that, but as far as style, which is your question, I guess I would say that I always related well. For I don't know what, maybe that was a gift.
To all kinds of people.
Yeah, to different, oh yeah.
So you were likable.
Right, very much so.
So they would receive the message
from
you.
Very much so.
Even though it might be a tough message.
But very much so. I mean, but I was fortunate, again, to have, as you said, the role models, but also the support. But again, what I learned is that if you're not willing to step out, if you're not willing to speak up, then who's going to do it? Then who's going to do it?
As I'm listening to you tell your story, what I take from this, your experience in the military taught you that you're just going to simply try to be the best at whatever you
Absolutely.
Do and get all the credentialization that you need to
Right.
get. But what I also hear you saying as a leader, you need to be courageous. But what it also seems to me is that you had a certain kind of mindset that you're not going to be denied.
Well, the thing about it is that whatever is that, and trying to, you know, frame it, you know, to be and to be fair to the place, to the organizations that I was involved with, is that like when I went to Borges. And basically, I went in as a member of their executive group. And at that point in time, I'm there for 27 years. And I was the only person of color at Borges at the executive level. And there was no one at Bronson. You know? So when we look at it from that perspective, you know, in healthcare, whatever, and things are changing. But 27 years, and don't tell me that people, that I was the only one deserving of whatever. And that doesn't mean that I wound up at the level that I might have otherwise. But on the other hand, I made my own decisions to remain in Kalamazoo and to stay home.
You've also, throughout your time as an executive, you've continued to be involved in the community. You've continued to be on boards. Is the main board that you're on the Family Health Center?
I'm on two I consider main boards right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the Family Health Center Board. I'm on the Community Mental Health Board. And I'm on the Douglas Community Association. I'm on their advisory board.
And you have always been active in the community all the while being an executive. Why has that been important to you?
Well, this goes back to my mother. She says, son, don't ever forget the bridge that carried you across. So that's the way I've tried to live my life, you know, and looking out for the others. And again, back what I said, I don't want to just repeat. But myself, people like Chuck Warfield, whatever there, again, if we're not going to speak out, then who's going to do it? And never forget the bridge. You know? And when you look at the mission of the Family Health Center and who they serve, you look at the mission of Community Mental Health and who it serves, you look at the mission of Douglas and who they serve.
When you reflect back on your time as an executive and your time serving on boards, being active in the community, what has been some of the toughest issues you've had to tackle that you're proudest of? Well, one I can think of, you were integral in the founding of the Family Health Center.
Right. That's a good question. From my Douglas days, we'll go back there. What we really built is that we built an organization. We built an organization that served the community. So however you say it, whatever we say, and the programs that we brought into place and that we put in place. So probably the tangible things is that you help build an organization and the organization serve people. You look at the Family Health Center, whatever there, we're talking about an organization that started with a trailer in a parking lot back in 1971. And today we have multiple locations, major sites, really nice facilities, and serving over 30,000 people and 140,000 patient encounters. So it's still about the service. So I think in terms of how we have helped these organizations build. So it's really building an organization, because organizations are built, from my perspective, from the top down. They're not built from the bottom up. And that means leadership. And again, I was fortunate enough to be able to be in the role, but I'm also fortunate enough to be in a support position so I can support people like Denise Crawford, who is the CEO, Chief Executive for the Family Health Center, like a Jeff Patton, who is the Chief Executive for Kalamazoo Community Mental Health, like Cherie Thomas, who is the Chief Executive at Douglas Community Association. So it goes on and on and on. Yeah. So basically the difference is going from being the leader myself to being more of a support. Because one of my philosophies we're thinking now is that people like myself, and I would say to Dr. Warfield over time, because we're the same age, he's a little older than I am, but anyway, is that we've had our time, and it's time for the next generation to step up and take over. And I'm supportive of that, you know.
So you believe very much in mentoring.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You talked about having courage as a leader. What is one or two of the most courageous decisions or acts that you have done as a leader?
Let's put it back up. Like when I was in the Army, see, the fact that I was a young person then, but the fact that I didn't roll over and play dead, and I didn't let people just mess over me, because I made it that it didn't matter what the consequences were, whatever there. So basically, I learned then from that experience that I had courage. But I had courage. And from there, is just that when you have an organization going forward, we had a situation at Douglas where that we were losing some funding. We're having some other debates with local situations. And we were being threatened, in a sense, with the loss of resources. And for lack of a better word, my attitude was damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. That we're going to keep running, we're going to do this organization. We're not going to be dictated to as to what we do. We're going to determine what we're going to do. And if we run out of money, we just close down. And everything always worked out, fortunately. But I mean, that took courage. You know? See, one of the things, maybe back up, and this was back in those days when I was younger, and we had a group from the School of Business here in Western came, and they were doing a project for Douglas. And I remember Al Reeder, him and I, having a one-on-one conversation. And he said to me then, he said, Moses, that the role of the leader is a lonely one, and there are many sacrifices you're going to have to make, and most of them are going to be personal. And you have to decide, are you willing to pay that price? You know, are you willing to pay that price? So one thing, I'll just say that leadership takes a toll. It takes its toll on you, regardless of who you are, regardless of what the condition you're in. But it takes a physical. And even when you're not aware of it, it takes a toll.
And what has sustained you?
Oh, my mother, prayers, you know, my family. So, and again, you know, community support.
Did you too have mentors out in the community, would you say?
Oh, yeah. I would say look at Arthur Washington. You know, whatever. You look at people like him, again, like you look at Jim Horn. You look at Mrs. Goodwin. You look at Mr. Caldwell. You know, whatever there. Our experience at Douglas is that we were fortunate that we had these people as our youth workers, but they were victims of a racist system, you know, because they were all educators and they weren't able to get jobs in the school systems. They weren't able to get jobs until middle 50s, late 50s and on. But you look at Mrs. Goodwin, retired as a distinguished administrator, Council of Public School, Mr. Caldwell retired, and others, whatever, there. So I'm saying when you look at the history from that standpoint, but again, it's they went on before us, so we didn't have to face the same thing, but we still face things.
You've obviously come a far way. Obviously, the people who were mentors to you came even a further way. What would you say about the state of race relations today?
What I would say is that, you know, clearly things have improved, but there's still challenges. Let's make no mistake about it. You know, and I try to say the younger generation is that your opportunities may be better, but you better not go to sleep. You better not go to sleep because racism is still there. And again, and it may come through in more subtle ways, but it still happens, you know. But on the hand, you look at this from a national standpoint, and especially from a healthcare standpoint, we know that Lloyd Dean, who was a Western Michigan University graduate and a friend of mine, you know, he heads up one of the biggest healthcare systems in the country, you know, which wouldn't have happened back then. So that's
an example. He's an African American.
Right, he's African American, yeah, from Muskegon.
And where is this system that he...
He's based in San Francisco.
Uh-huh. He heads it?
He heads up the system. It's one of the biggest systems in the country. You know? But he's the only one of others who are in major roles in healthcare. I mean, that never would have happened back in those days. So there are changes, but there's still challenges. You know? There are still challenges, and people are still denying. You know?
Is there anything else you might have wanted to say that I didn't ask you?
Well, like I said, having the building named for me, you know, it was a total surprise. It was an overwhelming experience. But again, when I look at that, it just says that to me, that's recognition of the service that I've given to this community. And it makes me feel that it was not in vain. Service was worthwhile. I'm very happy about that.
You had one final thought that you wanted to share.
Yes, one of the things that I didn't say earlier is that one of my favorite things is from a spiritual song by the Consolers, and it is, "May the work that I have done speak for me." And I always wanted to live my life. I don't need to say anything. I said this for Warfield. I said this for others, that may the work that they did, it speaks for them, so they don't need to say a word. Another one, now that kind of rambling, that is favorite of mine, is 2 Timothy, 4th chapter, 7th verse, is, "I have fought a good fight, I have finished the course, I have kept the faith." I get emotional when I think about, you know, those that have gone on, like when I'm Dr. Warfield.
Who headed the NAACP recently.
Right, and the contributions.
And passed away.
And the contributions that they made to this community, you know. And I used to say to him, not that we were the only two that ever did anything, far from that, but we get to a point in life that we were the only two left.
Because people were passing away.
Right, we were the only two left, and therefore, you know. And again, is that when I spoke at his services, he's another one, the work that he did, he didn't need to say anything. The work that he did spoke for him. And I want them to be able to say the same thing about me, that the work that I have done, and it speaks for me.
Thank you. You're listening to local humanitarian and retired healthcare executive Moses Walker on West Southwest on WMUK. Kalamazoo's Family Health Center, which has 5 locations, recently named its headquarters after Moses Walker. He helped found the center nearly a half century ago. For WMUK's West Southwest, I'm Earlene McMichael.